Previously on The Tide.
Russell.
Hello.
You pass a road sign welcoming you to Kingstide. You are heading down Bryant Drive. That is the name of the street that marks your destination. That is what it says on the postcard that you were shown by your friend. The only bit of communication that anyone's had from Ian in the last year or so.
Hello, I'm just looking
for... Go away.
Good afternoon, dearie.
Hello, I'm stopping by in town. I wondered if you've got any space.
As Grace finishes up with the transaction and you look over at the newspaper...
What paper is it?
It's the Kingstide Mirror for December 1st, 1941. The Tide.
The Bismarck sinks, Citizen Kane, Pearl Harbor. Why has this woman got a 57-year-old newspaper?
All very good questions.
I look around. Is there anything else in here that's nostalgic?
Well, it's a bed and breakfast run by a 71-year-old woman.
So yes.
There is on the walls what could charitably be described as mementos or local history, but that most people would call tat. There are a couple of framed newspaper articles up there. Actually, what look like whole framed newspapers, from the way that they're sort of set into a quite a large frame, but they've been highlighted to a specific, you know, front page article or whatever it might be. And they're all of the Kingstide Mirror, pretty much uniformly.
Russell's a history teacher.
Yes.
He read history at university.
He knows the stuff.
He knows loosely, although not about Kingstide. Russell's going to read through the various things on the wall, pick up some local lore.
Many of the articles that are sort of front and centre are to do with projects and infrastructure and things that have been built here in Kingstide. There is a mention of the lighthouse, which you saw on your way in, first being built. That's from a very old paper indeed. That's a 1911 paper, which appears to be like an original article. Like that's an old newspaper.
Yeah, sure is.
But there's talk of that work being completed on the lighthouse in one of these.
There's no way this woman was around and collecting newspapers in 1911.
Certainly not. No.
Maybe she was a little girl if she's that old, but.
If she was that old, like, you watched her walk up the stairs with at least some measure of, like, ability. She is not, you know, pushing 90, certainly.
The newspaper itself, if I've expended the stuff on display, it's only just, it's on the counter the wrong way around, right?
It's right there, yeah.
Well then, let's have a little gander.
Okay, you gonna take it?
I'm just gonna turn it around.
Okay.
To face me. Leaning on the counter.
Yeah.
Shouldn't take too long.
It shouldn't, no. Especially with your speed reading ability.
I'm a speed reader.
You have a specialty in that. Is the goal, the question of whether this is gonna require a test or not, is essentially do you want to read as much of this as you can while listening out and not getting caught reading this?
I think given the situation previous, Russell's a little shaken. I think I'd like to be able to hear out and turn it back around before. And just appear to be reading it over the other side, see the thing? I'm not going to be, like, scrambling to the other room.
Okay, then I think a roll would be a good idea. I'll do you a difficulty. And I'm going to use your spotted complication.
I thought you might.
Just because I know that you're very aware at this stage of...
I had that out of the corner of my eye on the cue card. I was like, oh no, that's going to come into play.
It's there to get you. All right. Let's have a listen. Another opportunity. Did you have a plot point?
I have one plot point.
If you wanted to, you could spend it and get rid of that spotted. It would go all the way down to nothing.
I don't want to have no plot points.
That seems fair. In that case, you've got an 8 to beat.
Okay. 8's not too hard, right? Right. I messed up my car on an 8 last time, but...
You did.
So, we're looking at here. I would say this is more cunning than wits, or do you reckon it's wits?
I was going to say courage.
Courage?
This is a little bit of like a push your luck game.
All right.
You know?
Yeah, you're right. You're not wrong.
I know that's not the answer you wanted to hear, because your courage is not...
Yeah, my courage isn't the highest. Knowledge for sure, or focus. Either one's fine. What do you think?
I think knowledge.
Okay. That's a D8. This is both history and speed reading.
Take them both.
Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. You get both of those specialties.
And then I get so many hitches. Are there both D6s? Right, that looks like it. No hitches, actually.
Amazing.
And I can beat an 8 pretty easily. I can get up to 12 there.
12?
And still have a D8 effect die.
Fantastic. That's great. With your D8 success, you've got a D8 asset there, and you're able to read the paper. Now, the headlines sort of stick out to you as fairly sort of what you would expect of this era, which is namely wartime. You know, they concern the war.
Right.
The headline reads, "Decisive battle rages in Crete," with a subheader quote, "She turned over, cracked in two." And that's sort of below, like an image of a ship, a boat that seems to be sort of roiling. Below that, also related to the boats, there is a little article entitled "Save Our Ships, £10 for Starters," with an exclamation mark at the end. And then sort of on the other side of the paper, as you're sort of scanning the most important information, the headlines, you can see it says, "Work begins to clear bombing raid," "Prince George to visit RAF base."
Do I know there's an RAF base near here? This is a local paper. I've got to assume so.
You would assume so. You don't know off the top of your head. You've never been to Kingside before.
Maybe that was the area with the antenna on the northern coast. Who knows?
Could well be. But with your success, the thing that actually sticks out to you is just behind the desk there. Not on the desk itself where the paper is sat, but on a little kind of stool just next to Grace's chair where she was sitting before you came in, there is a decently sized grey box on the front of which has it's closed, but on the front it says 1941.
Oh, this is a memento. Strange to have a box per year. I imagine there's all sorts of things in there. I think we might have ourselves an archivist.
It's at this point that you hear the sound of somebody, presumably Grace, coming down the stairs with slow deliberation.
I'll start talking when she roughly gets back into view, leaning as casually as I dare. I couldn't help noticing the history on the walls. Were you associated with the King's Tide Mirror?
Oh, she sort of... comes down just the last couple of stairs with a key in her hand, she says, "Not as such, not myself, but my mason was the he was a journalist for a little while and then a collector after that. This is his collection."
Your husband?
Oh yes.
Oh, he's not with us.
He's not. No, he passed away six years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, thank you.
I imagine we'd have been kindred spirits.
Of course, you're a historian.
A history teacher, actually. Yes. So, yeah, you never put down the scroll, as it were.
She's still doing that thing where, as you talk to her, her mouth is kind of moving in tow. You wonder maybe if she's like a little bit deaf and is trying
reading
to like
lips or something.
Maybe following along with you that way. And she says, "Well, in any case, your room's ready, Mr. Cauldron. If you'd like to come upstairs."
Yes. I'll just grab some things from the car.
Oh, right you are.
Go and grab my stuff, leaving behind the inventory of things I've collected on the passenger seat. I'm gonna, you know, go to the boot, find all the bag of clean clothes that I've got.
How much did you pack?
I expected to be out for the day, perhaps two. So, 3 changes of underwear. And then one change of all the other clothes. I don't know why. It's just, what if your underwear gets wet?
No, it makes perfect sense.
A little bit of over-preparing, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. So you grab your suitcase and you trail it back inside. You can see, you know, it's only now maybe 6:30 or so. And so the sky won't get dark for a little while, but those gathering clouds have sort of gathered just a little further, and the day is beginning to turn, clearly. You head back inside?
Yes, absolutely. Head in and get myself situated, at least.
Grace shows you around the bed and breakfast, such as it is. There is a sort of breakfast hall along one side, and it, with maybe 6 tables in there, not very many at all. And then on the opposite side, there is a little sort of sitting room, which is occupied. There is a man in there, a man of about 60 or so, with a magnificent mustache, and no other hair on his head, who is sitting there with a book of crosswords in front of him, frowning at it. She takes you upstairs to your room. You pass by a white painted door, which I think I mentioned. You presume that goes down into the basement, maybe, just from where it's situated, like next to the door. But she shows you around. There's she shows you the door to your room. There is like a linen cupboard if you need any. And she explains if you need any fresh sheets, you can go there. It's all very kind of pokey and a little shabby. Especially your room, which is not maybe... It's on the smaller side, certainly. And it's got this peeling, nondescript kind of white wallpaper. No pattern on it or anything, except for the peels of sections that have been going over the years. There's a little ensuite bathroom there as well.
Oh, very fancy.
Yeah. Now, you said no wake-up call, but yes to breakfast. So breakfast is served between 6 and 9. And if you do need anything, I'll just be downstairs until 10, okay?
Yes, maybe I shall set a wake-up call just in case for 8:30.
As you wish.
Just so I don't miss the breakfast.
Ah, good thinking. Yes, absolutely. Of course. Well, do feel free to drop off your things. Please, no noise after 10. That's when I try to get to sleep. So we have a fairly strict noise policy.
That shouldn't be a problem. When do you lock doors?
Usually about 10:30. Once I've got myself settled, it's the last thing I do.
Okay, thank you. I'm not intending to be out late, but, you know, helps to know if I get stuck anywhere.
Oh, yes, of course. And she's about to go, and she turns back and says, "Oh, by the way, that only gets Radio 4. I hope that's okay." And she points to a little FM radio that's sitting on your bedside table. They're just situated here in the house. It doesn't get any other frequencies.
Oh, how strange.
Yeah, I'd not really looked into it, but I never really needed anything else myself.
That's fair enough. Is your husband's archive, do you make it available?
Not as such. It's it's all downstairs. A little bit of a pain to get things out there. I like to pull out a box and have a little look through every so often, but I don't make a habit of it. Why are you interested?
Oh, always. Nothing specific, you understand. Just I'm just looking for my friend moved out here a little while ago. And haven't been able to get in touch since. Which reminds me, there might be someone looking for me here. Feel free to let them know that I'm staying here, etc.
Right, so, well, I'll make a note. Thank you, Mr. Calderon. And she sort of turns, leaves you to the room.
Thank you, Grace. What a strange place. I think Russell's gonna get some air. I'm aware that we need to finish that note and take it back to the house, because evidently the man behind the door doesn't want to talk, which is fair enough. Respect his privacy. Yeah, I'll head back to the car. I'll finish off the note. Quick jaunt to the...
Back to Ian's house.
To Bryant Drive.
Yeah.
And try and slide the note underneath the front door. Or, I guess, put it through the letterbox.
There's a letterbox, absolutely.
Yeah.
As you do that, at roughly the same time, there is a click and the door next door opens.
A little bit startled.
Yeah, you jump as though you've been sort of caught doing something wrong. But a woman comes out. She's pretty short. She has sort of dark brown skin and hair tied back in a ponytail. And yeah, just absolutely tiny. And she's bringing a bin out to the end of her street, where there is a black wheelie bin.
Mm.
There, she spots you.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "You're right, love."
A little bit startled.
She looks a little bit startled as well.
Oh yes, just dropping off a letter.
What, for the gent who lives here?
Well, I Russell goes down to the end of the path.
Yeah, she meets you down there and she pops the bin in the wheelie.
Keen to be kind of off that property, for as it were, sort of heads down to the end and says, "Well, I don't really know. I thought my friend lived here, but I tried to knock earlier and there was just an older gentleman living in here. My friend's about my age. Don't know if you have bald head or shaved head. 6'1".
Ian.
Ian.
Atkinson.
Yeah. Do you know him? Do you know where he is?
Yeah, I did. Sorry, what's your name, love?
Russell.
Russell. I'm Rena. Sorry, I don't... She sort of frowns and is, like, looking at you and trying to, like, get the measure of you, but also, like, is holding something back. And she says, I hope I'm not. I'm sorry if I'm the one to tell you. He's dead.
No. What do you mean?
Yeah, he passed away a few weeks back.
How? Weeks?
Yeah, not very long ago. I'm sorry. I am. There was a car accident, I think.
How? Why? Where?
She says, "I'm sorry. I'm not sure. His friend lives there. Well, they both did, but now he." She's sort of pointing back at the house kind of uselessly and doesn't really quite know what to say. I didn't know him very, very well. He was a lovely man. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No problem.
The two of you kind of stand there in the silence. She only came out to get her bins, but she doesn't quite want to pull back. You can tell that she doesn't want to. You're a stranger to her, but she can see you processing this. What does that look like on your face?
Russell's kind of wide-eyed. There's a lot of thought, like he's trying to solve a puzzle. Eyes are going everywhere. Looking back at the house, avoiding Rena's eye contact, except for to sort of check in, carry the conversation on, make sure she doesn't go away, that he's not left with this just yet. Tries a few times to start a sentence, fails.
She says, have you got somewhere to go?
I'm at the Cranford.
Oh, yeah.
With Grace, is it? I'll probably be... I should probably be going home, I suppose. Do you know what Ian's friend is called? Do you speak with him?
Oh, we did. Yeah, he's called Morgan. He doesn't come out very much now. But we see him.
If you get a chance, I think maybe we got off on the wrong foot. He doesn't seem to be very keen on company, as you said. So, or if he doesn't come out very often, I'd like to ask him some questions. If he knows where how Ian was toward the end.
She nods and says, I'll tell him you stopped by. And then she starts backing away up the path and closes the door to her house. You are left alone there, standing on the street, not a soul around you, when finally the sky cracks and it begins to pour.
Russell opens the door to Kerris, driver's side, sits, legs out of the door, doesn't even spin to get into the driver's seat before he just starts crying, letting the rain wash over his face.
You look up through the tears, and there, in the window, second floor, just standing, looking at you, the man you presume to be Morgan. And you get a look at him, because now he's in a room with the light on. You can see he's not actually that much older than you. He might be 28, 29. His short brown hair, kind of messy, and a kind of goatee. He has a little bit of a ratty look around him. Skinny. His eyes are wide. You briefly lock eyes, and then he's gone. And the light clicks off. Where do we find you next, after a little time?
On a bench. On a cliff.
Up there.
Got on a raincoat out of the boot. Neon green and pink. But up near the lighthouse, having climbed, switched back across the coastal paths, the wind's good. Feels like while the wind's on my skin, I can't feel anything else. I look up at this lighthouse, this thing made almost a century ago. I imagine the amount of people that have sat here thinking about loss. Thinking about a breakup, or how it might be to move in with a loved one, or the next step of your life, and how much this lighthouse has seen. It helps. Much the same as seeing the horizon helps you not feel so in it. All this to say that Russell isn't really thinking about Ian. Russell's trying not to. Does the bench have an inscription?
It did. And time has worn it away to illegibility. But it did. You sit for a while, looking out over the water, stretching all the way to the horizon, all the way to the edge, looking out behind you almost at this tiny town. And on the other side, that squat building. Not an Air Force base, it can't be. It's not nearly big enough. But you sit in that moment and don't even really register when the sun starts to go down.
It's the not knowing that hurts the most right now. I don't know why, but you can usually solve things if you can put things together. It doesn't feel real.
You're saying right now you don't have the pieces to put together, you just have an absence.
It's powerlessness. I need to know, and if this Morgan isn't going to answer the fucking door, then I'm going to find out. I assume there's a police station in Kingstide.
Yeah, you can assume that. You don't know immediately where it is, but it shouldn't be too hard to find out. Ask around.
If there was a car crash, someone is going to know about it, even if the person who knows best isn't going to answer the door. So I'll start where I can. I'll do the groundwork.
Do you head straight to the police station, or is that for tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm not sleeping if I don't do something about this. I'm probably not going to sleep anyway.
Sure. Then you trudge down the unsteady path in the darkness, there, slipping against the mud, but holding your own, hands bundled deep into your raincoat, back into the dim, twinkling lights of King's Tide, looking for answers. Thank you for listening. For more information, visit tide.show.